Welcome to the Milestones Motivation and Money Podcast, hosted by Angel Radcliffe. Tune in as we discuss finances, success stories, and inspiring vibes that will help nurture growth.
Hannah, welcome to the show.
Hi, Angel. Nice to meet you. So glad to be here today.
I am so glad to have you on and have you discuss with us how leaders can shift out of a burnout mindset. And boy, can I tell you, burnout is real. It's one of those things that it's hard to get out of the funk. And I enjoy you bringing your expertise to the show today. How about you give us a background on you and how you got into being a career coach?
Absolutely. Yes. So I guess the journey started when I experienced my own burnout. And I've burnt out more than once in more than one career and more than one job. And it was the last one that really shifted my world because I burnt out hard. It was like one of those, you hit a wall and then you just don't get back up. And I literally didn't get back up. I was in bed and I couldn't get out of bed for over a month. And it really frightened me. I was working full time in tech. I have two babies to take care of, primary earner in the household. And this just not being able to get up really frightened me. And it just opened my eyes to how absolutely critical my being is. And I went to doctors and nothing was wrong with my body. It was just that I was fried. And I had to get up. I was like, this is the most important thing in my life right now, is to turn this around, because I can't just take a 2-year sabbatical. I've got kids to support and take care of. I need to show up at home. I need to show up at work. Like this is unacceptable. I was just in a position where I had to figure it out, and I did, and I recovered, and it took a long time. And so I think my mission right now is to help other women identify the red flags, see it coming, hopefully stop before it happens, because recovering from like a complete burnout when you're not able to get out of bed, that takes a long time. We can do it. Ideally, we turn it around well before you get there and get you re-engaged and loving your career again, or restructuring your career path to the one that you do love and feel great about, so that you don't end up in a position where you run out of steam and you're not able to show up for what truly matters for you in your life. So that was that tipping point in my life, was when I burnt out and I was terrified for my own sake, for my children, for my career. I just thought, oh, I can't just let this all fall apart because I can't get out of bed.
Wow. Thank you so much for sharing some of your journey. You mentioned something about red flags and helping women understand and identify those red flags. So I think we've all been at a point of burnout throughout our personal lives or at work, but how can someone know when they are burned out? What are those red flags?
I like to think of it as like there's stages in the journey. Like it doesn't always happen all at once. Although when it does happen, you're like, wait, I guess I saw this coming, but I didn't realize it was going to be so bad. So the first signs is just that the job stress is getting to you. And so that looks unmitigated stress. It looks like irritability, anxiety, insomnia, poor concentration. Sometimes we get those gastrointestinal problems, headaches and migraines. And then where I feel like it shifts into a stage two is like when those symptoms, those physical symptoms, are paired with cynicism and detachment. When you start to lose faith in your own ability to show up, your enthusiasm for your work starts to diminish. The career that you worked so hard to get into, that you fought so hard for, that you used to love, no longer brings you joy, and in fact may be bringing you pain. And so that's when I feel like we're at a point where get some help now, turn it around before it goes farther. And so signs that you're mentally checking out are like loss of enjoyment, pessimism, isolation, detachment, lateness, or like procrastination, and resentment. Resentment is the big one. When you resent your job, it doesn't always get attached to the job. Sometimes it's like everything in your life. When you start resenting the things that are on your plate, whether it's parenting, whether it's your relationship, whether it's your job, that resentment is a really big like red flag to tune in and listen. And then stage three is when you feel hopeless and you're having poor performance, when you feel inadequate and you're easily overwhelmed and you start losing your confidence. And we don't want to get to that point, but you can turn it around once you have, because I did, and I've helped other women as well. So that's how I think about it in my head. I realize burnout is a big, complex topic that encompasses a lot of different things, but those are the signs and symptoms that I would pay attention to on your journey.
So I feel as though when we are in this phase of burning out, I think sometimes it's one of two things. The first thing I think is because people fail to set boundaries. And if you are speaking to a team of people, can you share some examples of how they can set healthy boundaries in their professional lives in order to prevent burnout?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Usually the first step, because that's a big one. I see a lot of women coming in and they're afraid to say no, or they think that what I hear is that they just can't say no. Like they open up their calendar, they look at their outlook for the day and they're like, I can't say no to any of this. I have to do it all. There's more than one way to say no. You don't just show up to work and say, I'm not going to do my job anymore because I don't feel like it. That's not how we say no. So there's delegation, there's minimizing, there's automation, and then there's saying no. And you can have the this or that conversation, the prioritization conversation, the if I do this, here are the outcomes. Because sometimes we don't want to do something for really good reasons, like it's not the best business choice. And just speaking up and laying it all out can help out with that. Another way to say no is not one that I typically advise, but that's just to ignore. Like sometimes we find ourselves in a situation where we're in a highly volatile situation where the priorities are changing every single day. So something comes in hot and you're like, tomorrow, no one's going to care about that. So you wait till tomorrow, see if anyone cares, and then decide whether or not you need to delegate it or do it or whatnot. So there's a lot of ways to say no. I think the very first thing that we need to do is figure out what we're saying yes to before we worry about saying no. And that is really the very first step is what are you saying yes to? What does matter to you? What is in alignment with your values and your purpose in this phase or season of life? And getting really clear of that and letting go of all of the shoulds and the expectations, like you're doing this to meet someone else's expectations. Are you doing this because you feel like you should do it? Or are you doing this because that person in the cubicle over there is doing it? Like unraveling all the shoulds, identifying what your values are, what your purpose is, what your direction is, getting super clear on that, and then saying yes to that and starting to carve out space for the direction that you do want to go in your career. That automatically, when you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else. And so when you say yes with intention, with purpose, it becomes so much easier to let the rest of the things fall to the side, be delegated, be deprioritized, because you have a purpose that's in alignment with your vision for moving forward.
When you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
Always.
I've never framed it up as that way, and I love it. I'm going to have to use that one. And you said something else, being aligned with your values and your purpose. And I think that goes down to understanding your why. Of course, people have to understand their why when creating boundaries. But I feel as though many times people have a hard time saying no because they feel as though maybe they're not going to be thought about for that next opportunity. And myself and a colleague had this conversation a few days ago where we're both like on a call at 8 p.m. and we're like, oh gosh, it's not enough time. And we were both doing something that we didn't necessarily care to do, but we were like, okay, we say no, maybe they won't choose us the next time. We won't have that visibility. And I think a lot of people think that in the corporate arena. So what are some ways that leaders can effectively communicate their boundaries without creating tension or conflict?
There's the this or that conversation. If it's a prioritization, like if you really don't have time in the day, or saying yes to this thing that you don't actually want to do is going to detract from your ability to deliver on the thing that does matter to you, does matter to the direction you want to take your career. Have a this or that conversation. Do you want me to do this or that? There's only this much time that we can do this in. Another thing that I find that surprised me was that the things that I really don't like doing, someone does. Someone in the office wants to do it. Not always, but usually you can find someone who's like interested or passionate about what it is that you're just not interested in doing. And lining them up and setting them up for success and seeing if you can shift that over to them. So some of these things, like it takes time to execute. Like it's not going to be, I don't want to go to the meeting tomorrow night at 8 p.m., but I don't have a strategy in place right now. You may end up going to the meeting at 8 p.m. tomorrow, but yeah, taking the time to take a step back and come up with a strategy to get rid of the meetings and the activities and the tasks that drain your energy. And by get rid of either minimizing them, delegating them, saying no strategically, in order to say yes to something else, like you're going to fill that space with something valuable. And I think that's really where that strategic conversation comes in, is what is that valuable thing that you're bringing to the table instead? So if you know what your valuable thing is, like the impact that you are making for the company, the reason why that thing over there is not so important, then it's much easier to have that conversation rather than I just don't want to do it.
I agree. And I feel as though there might be like some misconceptions about setting boundaries. I know there's some people who feel guilty when they set those boundaries. So if you're a leader, you're leading a team and you're tasked with multiple things or you're asked to do multiple things, what approach would you recommend for someone to take so they don't have that guilty feeling of enforcing their boundaries?
So the first thing to realize is that you are the linchpin of your life. If you are not able to show up as your best, highly engaged self, you're not going to be able to get the results that they want or the results that you want. So, you know, the results that your company's counting on you for is more than just your face time or your time hours, right? It's you're delivering something of impact, and getting really clear on what that impact is can help with the guilt, because your highest goal is going to be delivering whatever that impact is, and make sure that your boss is aligned with you on that, your team is aligned with you on that. You know what the impact is. And if something is going to get in the way of you delivering that impact, that value, something that's going to drain your energy, then you can start to, you know, create boundaries without feeling guilty, because it's for their best interest as well as for yours. Protecting your energy is your job. Because if you are drained and non-performative, that's not going to serve them. They're not going to get what they need out of you. So yeah, there's no reason to feel guilt. I understand the guilt. I do. I understand the fear that's behind it. Like you're saying, like, you know, the loss of visibility. So visibility is something that you need to actively manage. And saying no to one project, if you're managing your visibility as a whole and your strategy and the value that you have said that you are going to deliver and that everyone is aligned, that's the most important thing, then you should be able to manage your visibility and get the things off your plate that aren't going to move that forward. There are going to be times where there's a sacrifice that's required. And as long as it's really clear that it's a sacrifice and it's having a negative impact on the thing that you ultimately want to deliver, I think that's fine. As long as people are all realized, like, this is going to diminish the bigger picture here. But sometimes we do have to pull one in for the team, but don't make that your default and don't feel guilty for not doing it all the time.
Hannah, those are great points. And one of the other things I would like to bring up is how people push your boundaries or they disregard your boundaries. Can you share with us some ways or guidance on how leaders can navigate situations where someone's disregarding their boundaries? And here's an example. I know a lot of people have families, multiple responsibilities outside of work. Some people will say, no, laptop is closed at 5 o'clock. And then you have someone messaging you at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night. How do you show someone to respect your boundaries?
I typically have a conversation again with them, because sometimes, like, I actually did do something very similar where I had a conversation with my boss at the time. I'm like, all right, I'm happy to come in at 7 o'clock in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, and have calls overseas. However, between, I think it was 4:30 and 7:30 p.m., my kids were really young. So that was like bedtime, right? Happy to get back on after 8. But those hours were sacred, right? Because they need their mama. And my boss was totally cool with it. Yeah, 4 months later, I've got a new boss. So you set the boundary. It's not like you're erecting a wall that's never going to move. Like, you have to set it again and again. So yeah, so it's like a persistence on your part to, these are my standards, unless it's an emergency, like an actual literal emergency. Although using light languages, people doesn't always land, because sometimes in their minds, they think it's an emergency, even though in 4 days, no one's going to remember it. Therefore, not an emergency. But I know in the midst of corporate chaos, people don't always think that way. But yeah, I think the resetting of those boundaries, like, you set them once, they get respected, and then circumstances change and you have to go and reset them again.
So you mentioned something about letting your boss know, hey, you're going to be back on later in the evening. Now, do you feel as though cutting off at a 5 o'clock time, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock time to have that one-on-one time with your spouse or your family is a sufficient way to balance your personal life and professional life?
It really depends. The me coming back on late is a special thing. That's if we're interviewing overseas or something like that. It's not a daily occurrence. And largely because I'm just not performative at night. Like, I'm zonked. I'm great in the morning, really early, fantastic. And everyone's different. And if you have a healthy team, then you should be able to balance each other out. There's some people that love to work late and some people love to work early. And if you're, like you said, you mentioned you work in tech, we're working with people all across the globe. And if you're in a well-balanced team, there should be enough people there with different preferences that you can hammer out who's going to take what piece of that puzzle.
You said something that I was sitting here thinking about, how you're not performative at night. And I sometimes feel like I perform best in the evening when no one's bothering me. I don't have multiple pings coming through on my teams and I can actually get work done, because you think about in your actual workday, many times we're on meeting after meeting and people are, they want to chat or something's happening that's disrupting your work. I feel like sometimes I perform better at night, and then I'm like, all right, I've been on my computer all day long. And I think this rolls into the next question, whereas a lot of people are focused on being high performers and getting the work done. And especially when you're a leader, there's a lot of talks of being resilient and staying. Do you feel as though that's a form of toxic empowerment when people say, oh, you have to be resilient, you have to stay strong and you can do it? And what about your mental health?
So resilience is about your mental and your physical health. So getting enough sleep at night is a part of being resilient. There's so many studies that show that if you're not getting enough sleep at night, your decision-making goes. So there are basic things, basic human care that needs to happen in order to be resilient, in order to be actually performative and not just busy. And I think smart organizations understand that. And I realize that occasionally we get a boss that doesn't. But building your resilience is about being well-rounded and healthy. And it's also about having downtime. I like to think of it as a white space or margin. Even in your like 9-to-5 daily calendar, you cannot be back-to-back meetings all day long and be providing something of high value. Like, you need to have margin to take care of things that come up suddenly, like something unexpected comes up, and a request that you weren't expecting. There needs to be white space in the calendar. And so blocking it off and making sure that it's there so that you can be flexible, so that you can react to something that is unexpected in a healthy way, is important. And that's just part of being resilient. That's part of being performative. Like, taking these measures to take care of yourself, to manage your calendar, to make sure there's enough white space or margin in your life, both during your 9-to-5 or whatever your hours are and in your personal life, are critical. These are critical things, just part of being a human being.
I agree. There's so much that I can say there, but I want to get more into how leaders can really foster a culture of setting healthy boundaries and support their team members who might be struggling with boundary setting. Do you have any suggestions there?
Yes. Well, it depends on the maturity of your team. Some members, they're going to be looking, first of all, set an example. You are the example. So if you're saying don't wake up, work on the weekends, and you are IMing everyone on Saturday, it's not going to work. So you do have to set the example. And so that's the first level, is just be an example. The second is in your one-on-ones, always ask how they're doing on a scale of 1 to 10. What are they, falling asleep at their desk? Or are they completely overwhelmed? Like, where are they on the spectrum? And if they are consistently going extra, going overboard, taking on, just never saying no, and you can usually spot them. They're typically early career and they don't know how to say no. They've never been taught. They didn't know. They didn't even know they can. So I think the first, let them know they can say no and teach them how. So you can have them use you as a shield. Say, I need to check my boss first before I take on another project. Have good processes in place, like an intake process for new requests and work coming in, to help protect your people so that it's not coming straight. If they're junior, they're younger, inexperienced, make sure it's not going straight to them. You know, make sure there's an intake process, that you're providing that umbrella of protection that you should be doing as a leader. If there's more senior people on the team, you can pair them up. If you've got a person on the team that knows how to plan work and negotiate timelines and say this or that, or this first and then that, doing that, those conversations, those negotiations with your stakeholders, pair them with the more junior folk, and that helps out a lot too.
Those are really good tips. And one of the things that I was sitting here thinking is self-awareness and being self-aware, and maybe that can play a role in setting and maintaining boundaries. Is that something that you found through your coaching?
Yeah, that's like the key. The key is to first identify what it is you actually want out of life, including your career, and identifying your values. And then once you have what matters to you and your values paired up, then that self-awareness helps you to manage your yeses and your nos, to help you honor your yeses and your nos. And then also another thing that we do to increase that awareness is there's one exercise where we color code our calendars, but instead of by task or by group type or whatever, like we do it by energy. So color code your calendar, like high energy activities, things that build your energy, that you enjoy, that lift you up, and things that suck you down. And then you have an idea of, oh, okay, when I have these activities on my calendar that I find draining, how do I offset that? Can I squeeze a walk in or something that'll help balance myself out so that I can continue to be performing at a high level and I don't get to that point where you just hit that wall or that afternoon slump and you're going for the caffeine or the sugar that's just going to tax your body even more, especially in the long term. So it's building awareness with intention and looking for ways that you can add in simple activities and tools to manage your stress, to bring your nervous system back into the parasympathetic, or which is like the rest, digest, and heal state, which is also the state of being creative. It's a beautiful space to be in. It's that flow space. So you want to get your nervous system back there if you're going to have activities in your calendar that day that are going to throw you off and you know it. Finding those right tools and fitting, scheduling them in with intention to be like, I'm going to take 2 minutes here and reset my nervous system before I get back into this next stressful call. And you will be so much more present. You'll be so much more on it, so much more engaged and performing at a higher level.
So Hannah, I know everyone doesn't naturally have that self-awareness trait. For someone who's trying to learn to be more self-aware, how can they cultivate that?
Yes. Something that works, like if you're not in a coaching program and you're not being given like specific exercises and being walked through them and held accountable. So outside of that, I think one of the most powerful things that you can do as like a DIY is like a daily retrospective. And it can take a few minutes, like what went well, what didn't go well, what needs to change. And think about your calendar, think about your energy levels throughout the day. Think about how motivated and engaged you are. Think about your own values and your own career path and your desires and see how that day lined up. And just do that every day for a while. And it's really low maintenance. It does not take long. This is like a few minutes. And that'll help you as the days go on, as you're going through the day, to be aware, oh, this happened yesterday or this happened last week. And I can shift how this occurs for me. You start to become more strategic in how you approach your days, how you approach your week, how you manage your calendar, and what you commit yourself to.
So is this something that you provide in your coaching program, or do you have resources that the audience can work on to focus on their boundaries and managing their burnout?
I do. I have it's like a cheat sheet, and it's called How to Work, I think 20% Less, but really it's about getting focused and efficient and purposeful in how you manage your day and your life. And so it's just the 7 principles that you need to consider when you want to start shifting your engagement with work. Like you want to increase engagement, decrease stress and effort. These are the 7 principles to consider.
Awesome. So we will list the link for that cheat sheet in the show notes, and hopefully it helps someone with their journey. And speaking of burnout, we talked about like managing, setting boundaries. We talked about all of these things, but I don't think that we focused on how do you actually come back, rejuvenate? What are some things that you can do to rejuvenate outside of work if you are suffering from burnout, but you want to still focus on your responsibilities? So how do you balance? What are some suggestions for someone to balance?
There are so many, and the ones that are going to be relevant to each individual is going to be different for that individual. So I'll just give you the high level. So the first is to find those energy giving activities and making sure that you are doing them, having them in your life, whether they're work related or not. So if you like to knit, add some knitting in between meetings or even while you're on, if it's a call where you're just listening. Joyful movement is big. And I don't mean like a guilt-induced, I've got to burn calories kind of movement, but like something fun, something that you enjoy doing, whether it's walking in nature or just somehow moving your body is really good. Sleep. We all know about sleep. I think one of the things I hear from just about everyone who struggles with burnout is insomnia. It's a big deal. So having a good nighttime routine, like pre-bed, turn it down, turn everything off, shut it down, have a practice where you can shut your brain down and manage your sleep and track your sleep and treat it like it's something that matters, because it does. Nutrition also matters. I don't mean go on a diet, please don't. But what I do mean is eat for nutrition, eat for energy. And that's just be a nutrient sinker, eat things that are high in nutrient value. And basic health stuff, in addition to looking for, to add joy to your life. So those high energy activities, those things that fill your cup. And then there's also rest. And you could build your own custom toolkit of activities that kind of reset your nervous system, everything from 2 minutes of box breathing to completely reset your nervous system, like really fast, to going to a spa and getting a 90-minute massage. Like the tools are endless. And what you want to do is have enough tools of varying cost, time, availability, so that you can use them throughout the week at various points. So I think just getting a really robust tool belt of nervous system resetting tools to help you get back into that parasympathetic state so that you are able to recover, rest, and heal, and be in the best state of flow and creativity, as well as just making good choices to support yourself and not feel guilty about it and let go of the guilt, because you are always remember that without you, your career does not exist. So taking care of you is your job.
That is really great advice. And who doesn't love a spa day?
Because I know. I do love spas.
That's usually my number one solution when I'm getting stressed or I feel like I'm getting to the point of burnout. I'm like, just give me a spa day. That's all I need. Yes. Sit in the steam room and relax and don't think about work and your meetings. I appreciate all the advice and tips that you've shared today, Hannah. It's been so great having you on the show. And we, of course, would love to have you back. I know we're here towards the end and I have so many more questions, but we'll save that for maybe a part two down the road. One thing I would like to ask you, if you can share with our listeners, in your journey as a leader, what is one piece of advice that you can share with someone else to carry on with their leadership journey?
Don't give up. I think just not giving up on your own vision of success.
Okay. I think that's super important because you have so many people who, and this goes back to what I was saying, resilience, not giving up, keeping the goal in front of you. Do you have any tips around pushing someone? Let's say they're working on their goal, they're not getting any traction. What tips would you give to empower them so that they're not giving up?
Sometimes a reframe is helpful. So taking a step back, and sometimes I love to go too fast, but I know that a lot of women I work with also love to go too fast. So sometimes keeping that whole the tortoise wins the race concept in mind, slowing down, stepping back, sometimes even just doing something completely different and then coming back to it. So those margins, those white space, those the times in between are so powerful. And then also outside perspectives, which is another way of taking a step back. And then you come back to it with fresh eyes. Because if you just keep grinding, keep pushing, you're likely just going to keep getting the same results. So yeah, taking a step back and shifting perspective, finding a way to reframe, whether that's through conversation with others, whether it's through taking a really long walk in nature. But yeah, finding a way to get some distance and a fresh perspective.
So Hannah, those are great tips. Do you have any last words for our listeners today?
Don't forget that you are the linchpin of your life. Without you, your career does not exist. So anytime you are going to deprioritize your own care, please remember that taking care of yourself is your job. It's your first job. And then as you do a great job of taking care of yourself, you can show up even better and actually get what you want out of your career without running out of steam.
Thanks for listening. Stay connected with Angel online on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook at Miss RMBA. That's MISSRMBA. Be sure to subscribe and review. Join us next time as we continue to empower you through milestones, motivation, and money.